I have a problem with Earth Day. While most sermons tend to be preachy, or at least most of my sermons tend to be preachy, most Earth Day sermons I've heard or I've preached lay it on pretty thick. They either elicit wisdom learned from Canada's First Nations or their connection to the land, or like I did in my World Day of Prayer sermon, turn it into a pseudo-lecture, highlighting the ways that we could or should participate in our world. But the funny thing about sermons is that sometimes someone actually listens. After my World Day of Prayer sermon, on my way home, I stopped to get groceries. And not only did I forget my reusable bins and my reusable bags, but when I saw a member of the church that happened to be there for the service and the sermon, I sheepishly confessed the fact that I would have to take plastic bags home. And we've all heard the horrors of plastics in just the last few weeks. You've seen article after article, the dead whale filled with, I think it was like 60 pounds of plastic that washed ashore. Or how bottled water actually contains microplastics that you're drinking, which is one good reason that we should ban them from our church building, let alone using them altogether. Or how Flint, Michigan went nearly 3 years without safe drinking water. And how many residents still today are forced to use bottled water because a true fix is still almost 2 years away. Anyway, luxury. The problem is that I didn't remember my bags when I got to the grocery store, my reusable ones. When I met that congregation member and confessed my sins, I tried to pridefully redeem myself. I said, I know it's wrong, but at least I take the bags home and reuse them for cat litter, making sure that at least they get a second use. To which this very kind soul said, wonderfully blunt, "You mean you don't put your cat litter in the compost?" That's about how it went, Margaret, right? Awesome. We need those kind souls in our lives to point out what more we can be doing. Even when we think we're doing enough. We need them to share their vision of how they see the world and our place in it. We need this wisdom to feed us, to enable us and others to grow. For as the scripture read, we are like trees planted by streams of water, says the psalmist, which yield their fruit in its season and their leaves do not wither. For happy are those who ground their lives in God like the mighty oak, both reaching down into the earth for stability and reaching into the heavens for joy. Happy are those who look to the world not just on Earth Day, but who see daily reminders why they should care for this planet. For they bring wisdom into our lives that all of creation may thrive. Happy are those who plant themselves in the wisdom and presence of the divine, which hold us strong, which feed us by the life that flows in and through us. And that's beautiful poetic language, but what feeds you? What nourishes your soul? What enables you to keep the faith? That is, faith being what you do between the last time you experienced God and the next time you experience God. For those that care deeply about Earth Day, this earth itself, what keeps you motivated in this task? Is it a place or a feeling? I remember seeing the Rocky Mountains for the first time, staring at the ages-old cliffs and sharp rocks, wondering in my 10-year-old self how the snow stayed up there in the summertime. I remember dipping my feet in the ocean for the first time and feeling the extreme cold of the water. I remember walking through the woods and picking perfectly ripe blackberries off wild bushes, unconcerned with sprays or owners, or even considering who might have planted these bushes. Memories of that trip when I was young, when I went out to BC with my family, still ground me in wonder, in the wonder of the beauty of this land, let alone planet. But then when I go to the grocery store, creation is a commodity. I tuck away those memories of BC as my brain tries to remember what I was supposed to buy for dinner. I need to remember that what I buy and how I buy it is changing the world, changing this planet. I have to realize that my hungers are not more important than someone else's. I need to be a more creation-aware shopper, for what feeds my soul, feeds my spirit, is more important than what feeds my stomach. That's the luxury and the privilege and the responsibility that I'm in. I am planted by sources of life, planted in this community with sources of wisdom all around me. This wisdom feeds me and challenges me and allows me to stand taller. Knowing the presence of God both holds me firm and allows me to reach beyond my comfort zone. From this place of privilege, I can and I must consider bottles of water and their true cost on the environment. When you buy an entire case for what, like $2? And yet that plastic will stay around for years and years and years. From this place of privilege, we at our executive have talked about where our coffee beans come from, that we serve at Gather and Gab and at our lunches. It's what's prompted us to offer fair trade coffee, knowing that our lives are connected to the lives of others on this planet. It's why Heather is going to Guatemala. We don't get to live in Kitchener and think, it's all about us. It's not just Earth Day that we do this, but today we're reminded of this deliberate awareness of one's place in the world. For those who mark Earth Day, or those who practice an Earth Day mindfulness every day, who find inspiration to care for creation, what feeds you? What nourishes your soul as you contemplate both the beauty and the brevity of this life? For all of us, what feeds us in a way that you are so dependent upon that without it, you would wither, as a tree withers when its source of water is cut off? You don't have to say God, but I mean, it's the right answer. You know children's time when the minister sets up, okay, so talk about love, or you answer love or Jesus or God, and you can usually get 90% of what the minister answers. But I'm not really looking for the easy answer. Instead, I want you to think on this Earth Day, what parts of creation most reveal God to you? If you had to close your eyes and picture holy ground, a moment, an element of creation, what would you bring to mind? What feeds you in a way that nothing else does? When the psalmist thought of God, they thought of a tree planted beside a stream. The psalmist imagined the tree bearing fruit and weathering the seasons. The imagined tree roots dig deep in the soil, reaching for a source of life. What have you planted yourself in, which holds you up and feeds you and causes you to grow? The imagined tree branches reach high into the heavens, stretching out to receive the warmth provided. What makes you reach beyond yourself in ways that make you necessarily vulnerable? Above and below this imagined tree, God was and is. God's embrace held it firm. God's love beckoned growth. For the psalmist, this tree revealed what God was like, what life in God was like. But for each of you, if you had to pick a part of creation that reveals God for you, what would it be? A tree? A mountainscape vista? An animal companion? Your children? Your friends? With the beauty that thankfully has come with the weather, we went for a walk yesterday. And we noticed as we walked the tenacity of crocuses. Crocusi? Little pretty flowers. That amidst the ice-covered lawns, the fierce determination of the crocuses heralded the reign of spring and new life. Resurrection was afoot, even in small, almost unnoticeable ways. in this season of Easter, in this season in our corner of the world, in this season of the church, in this season of our humanity, the persistence of crocuses brought beauty into this world. And it was powerful. There are many reasons that we would forgive if they did not bloom. And yet, almost defiantly, they did. We too can find all sorts of reasons to despair about this world. But I think we're like crocuses, defiantly blooming for all to see. And if happy are those who plant themselves beside things that feed them, what divine experiences enable you to live faithfully with respect in creation, as our creed says? What parts of this creation create awe in you or respect in you? What parts of it feed you and most reveal God for you? I think the problem that I have with Earth Day is easily fixed. That instead of guiltily looking at the world made to feel helpless by our own inaction and the overt abuses of the land by others, we must merely ask God, "Teach me, God, to wonder, teach me, God, to see. Let your world of beauty capture me." That our wonder and our vision may be captured by beauty. That this beauty may stir up enough reason for us to act, be it as small as a plastic bag. That so too may our despairs and our helplessness be captured by the radiance of this beautiful pale blue dot. So that our hopes may be as deep as the roots of the tree and as high as the tallest branch, held by the one who creates us, who makes us to be sources of beauty, sources of life upon this earth.